If you are standing in a like a massive, slowly moving line for a $15 beer at a concert, you probably assume the venue is just, trying to save money on bartenders.
Oh, yeah, that's the classic assumption.
Right. You figure they understaffed by design to keep labor costs down. But behind the scenes, the venue manager isn't rubbing their hands together at the savings. They're actually panicking because every minute you stand in that line, their profit margin is just plummeting.
Yeah, friction is it's the absolute enemy of revenue in the live event space. I mean, the longer you wait, the less you spend, and the data reflects that immediately.
And today we are taking a deep dive into the invisible high-stakes economics driving that exact scenario. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here for this one.
Our mission today is to give you a comprehensive behind-the-scenes look at how modern events actually make money in 2026. We are pulling from a stack of industry sources, so we've got comprehensive guides and data from Ticket Fairy, TicketSpice, and Dealroom Events.
Really robust data sets.
Yeah. Exactly. And this material covers everything from massive festival ticketing architecture to the strict KPIs, key performance indicators of B2B corporate conferences. We really want to shortcut you to being the smartest, most well-informed person in the room the next time you scan a ticket or walk onto a convention floor, because the financial landscape for live events right now is just wild.
It's a profound squeeze. I mean, the structural costs of putting on an event have skyrocketed over the last few years.
Let's set the scene with some numbers from the sources. Inflation pushed the average global concert ticket to an all-time high of $127.38 back in 2024. Yet looking ahead, 69% of B2B event leaders report their budgets for 2025 and 2026 are either entirely flat or, in some cases, actively decreasing.
Which is terrifying for planners.
Right. And you have UK grassroots music venues reporting a razor-thin 0.5% profit margin. To put that in perspective, for every $1,000 flowing through the venue, they get to keep $5.
And that reality has forced a massive shift in the industry's baseline philosophy. Historically, for a lot of community events, trade shows, or, association meetings, simply breaking even was considered acceptable.
Like, as long as nobody lost money, we're good.
Exactly. Covering costs was a successful year. But today, with the sheer volatility of supply chains, vendor costs, and intense competition for audience attention, breaking even is basically a death sentence.
Wow.
Yeah. Ticketing architecture has completely moved away from just a static price tag. Organizers rely on tiered pricing and early bird strategies as, well, financial utilities, not just marketing gimmicks.
So it's not just a promo code.
No, not at all. When an event launches an early bird discount, typically offering like 20% to 30% off the final gate price, they are securing essential upfront cash flow. Most major vendors, from audiovisual teams to caterers, they require 50% deposits months in advance.
Right.
So early buyers literally fund the actual creation of the event.
So the early buyer isn't just getting a reward for being a loyal fan. They are functioning as a short-term interest-free loan for the organizer.
That is exactly the mechanical function of the discount.
But
But, to make you actually pull out your credit card months in advance, organizers have to utilize psychological triggers.
like what?
Well, they cap that early bird tier. It either has a strict calendar deadline or a limited inventory, which triggers FOMO, the fear of missing out.
Right. The only 50 tickets left at this price. Warning.
Exactly. Once that cap is hit, the price steps up. However, the sources emphasize that organizers must limit these pricing structures to three or four clear tiers. So, for example, early bird, advance, and regular.
Because if you give people too many choices, like general admission tier one, tier two, tier three, VIP light, VIP premium, they just freeze.
Yeah, decision paralysis. If a buyer gets confused about which ticket offers the best value, they leave the checkout page to think about it. And an abandoned cart rarely converts later. You have to make the progression incredibly clear.
I understand the logic of clear tiers, but I want to push back on the pricing model itself for a second. Why rely on these rigid blocks of tickets when dynamic pricing exists?
Dynamic pricing.
Yeah, we see airlines and ride-sharing apps adjust prices minute by minute based on real-time supply and demand. If a festival is selling out faster than expected, shouldn't the algorithm automatically raise the price to maximize that 20% profit margin?
Well, dynamic pricing makes total economic sense in a vacuum, which is why massive arena tours use it. When you have a monolithic artist with a captive audience who has no alternative way to see that specific show, dynamic pricing extracts the maximum possible revenue.
Right. They can charge whatever they want because people will pay it.
But the sources highlight the severe vulnerability of that model. It absolutely destroys attendee trust. Fans often feel financially gouged.
They feel penalized for just buying a ticket at the wrong hour.
Exactly. And for a recurring B2B conference or an annual music festival, trust is the primary driver of repeat attendance. If a software developer pays $1,500 for a Tech Summit badge on Tuesday, and their colleague pays $900 for the exact same badge on Wednesday because demand dipped.
Oh, they'd be furious.
You have alienated a core customer forever. That is why reputable festivals and B2B events actively avoid true dynamic pricing. Instead, they use what is called transparent yield-style pricing.
Meaning the price increases are tied to specific, publicly known thresholds. Like airline pricing, where the last few seats cost more, but everyone knows the rules in advance.
Right, they broadcast the rules. Prices go up on Friday at midnight, or only 500 tickets left at this price. They pair this with group deals, like buy four, get one free, to incentivize bulk purchases without cheapening the core brand value.
That makes a lot of sense.
There's a great case study from our sources featuring Mike Abrams of Click Events that illustrates this perfectly. He utilized strategic fee controls, transparent early bird tiers, and very targeted flash sales. By keeping the rules predictable, he significantly boosted his average order value without generating the backlash associated with algorithmic surge pricing.
Okay, let's connect some dots here. They navigate the psychology, you buy the ticket, they secure their upfront cash. But getting that ticket revenue is really just the baseline, because the sources note that in the music and entertainment space, artists can take anywhere from 70% to 85% of base ticket sales.
Sometimes even more for top-tier talent.
Which is insane. If the talent is taking almost all the ticket money, how does the venue actually survive?
Well, the hidden reality of the live event business is that the base ticket primarily covers the talent and the core production. The actual profit, the lifeblood of the venue, is measured by a metric called RPA, or revenue per attendee.
Okay.
This represents the secondary, on-site spending. The food, the beverages, the merchandise, the VIP lounge upgrades.
We're talking about the $40 t-shirts and the expensive beers.
Exactly. On average, organizers generate an additional $26.62 per attendee on-site. But for major gigs and highly engaged crowds, that number easily eclipses $40 per person.
Wow.
And the margins on these secondary items are massive compared to the ticket. Concessions typically operate on a 60% to 70% profit margin.
Oh, that's huge.
It gets better. VIP merchandise bundles, where you buy a premium laminate and an exclusive poster, frequently hit margins upwards of 50% because the fan is paying for the perceived exclusivity of the experience, not the raw material cost of the cardboard and plastic.
Here's where it gets really interesting, going back to what we talked about at the very beginning. The biggest threat to that high-margin secondary spend is the queue. We always assume lines are just a necessary evil of gathering 10,000 people in one place.
Yeah, just part of the experience.
Right. But every minute, a fan is standing in line for a drink, they aren't watching the show, and more importantly, they're physically prevented from buying a second drink.
Yes. A queue is a hard cap on transaction volume. If a bartender can only process one transaction every 2 minutes because of slow credit card readers or manual pouring, the venue's revenue hits a ceiling, regardless of how thirsty the crowd is.
So they're just leaving money on the table.
Absolutely. Cutting wait times directly and dramatically boosts concession sales. The data shows that reducing friction can boost overall sales by up to 42%.
That is a staggering jump in revenue just by speeding up a line. But how do you mechanically do that? If you just hire 100 extra bartenders, you've blown up your labor costs, which ruins the 70% profit margin on the beer anyway.
You don't use humans to speed it up. It requires operational KPIs and heavy technological integration. Modern venues optimize their staff-to-patron ratio by removing the friction points of the transaction itself.
Like what kind of tech?
They implement mobile ordering, where you buy the drink on your phone while watching the stage, touchless payment kiosks, and automated pre-poured dispensing systems. The NFL's Denver Broncos provide a prime example in the data.
What do they do?
They implemented cashless, contactless systems that effectively halved their wait times. And as a result, they saw a 34% spike in concession sales.
Just from going cashless?
Just from that. They didn't necessarily add more human labor. They just removed the bottlenecks, slowing the humans down.
So what does this all mean? We just established that venues are pulling in massive revenue from secondary spending, 34% spikes in sales, 70% margins on drinks. If they're aggressively optimizing revenue once we walk through the doors, why are we seeing numbers like that 0.5% profit margin for grassroots venues? Where is all this cash evaporating to on the back end?
It evaporates into the hidden structural costs of event planning. if an organizer is not vigilantly tracking their back-end liabilities, the high-margin beer sales mean absolutely nothing.
So it's a leaky bucket.
A massively leaky bucket. The financial landmines in this industry are staggering. The sources provide a prime example, an event organizer who got hit with a surprise $10,000 Wi-Fi bill at the end of their conference.
Wait, $10,000 just to let attendees check their email? How does that even happen?
Because dedicated high-density bandwidth wasn't explicitly negotiated in their initial audiovisual quote. When you have 500 people trying to live stream a keynote simultaneously, standard hotel Wi-Fi just collapses.
Right.
AV companies charge premiums for dedicated access points and bandwidth mapping. And if it's not in the contract, you pay emergency rates on the day of the event.
And I imagine Wi-Fi is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, it is. Planners also face hotel attrition clauses. When you book a block of rooms for a conference, you sign a contract guaranteeing a certain percentage of those rooms will be filled.
Let me guess. If attendees don't book them.
Yep. If your attendees decide to book Airbnbs instead, the organizer owes the hotel tens of thousands of dollars in unsold room penalties. Then you have union overtime fees if a stage breakdown runs like 15 minutes past midnight.
Just 15 minutes.
That's all it takes. The liability is so pervasive that 85% of modern planners now bake a strict 10% contingency fund into their budgets, purely to survive these unforeseen back-end surprises.
If I'm an organizer dealing with inflation, surprise AV bills, and strip union overtime, my immediate instinct is to just slash the budget.
Sure, that's natural.
But how do I cut costs without you, the attendee, noticing? If I downgrade the catering or hire cheaper, less engaging keynote speakers, the attendee experience suffers. That destroys the trust we talked about earlier, and you won't buy an early bird ticket next year.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you are hitting on the golden rule of 2026 event budgeting. Cut fat, not value. You cannot cut corners that impact the attendees' five senses. Instead, you have to become ruthlessly efficient in your vendor negotiations. A primary tactic is demanding modular AV bids.
How does a modular bid work mechanically?
Well, historically, organizers would accept a massive lump sum quote for production like Package A or Package B. Today, data-savvy planners force the audiovisual company to separate the core infrastructure from the experiential enhancements.
So splitting it up.
Exactly. You sign a hard contract for the basic PA system and standard stage lighting, but you put the $20,000 massive LED video wall on an option contract that expires 30 days before the event.
Oh, like a financial option.
Exactly. If your ticket sales pacing hits your optimistic targets, you execute the option and build the LED wall. If ticket sales are sluggish, you just let the option expire. The attendee still hears a perfectly mixed audio presentation. They just assume you opted for a minimalist stage design.
That is incredibly smart. You scale the physical environment to match the real-time cash flow.
Another major tactic is booking non-traditional venues during shoulder seasons. You know, those weeks just before or just after a city's peak tourist season. You can save 20% or more on venue rental fees while still providing a premium location.
That's a huge savings.
And organizers are also heavily utilizing in-kind sponsorships. Rather than paying for an expensive keynote speaker's first-class flight and hotel out of the event budget, they negotiate with an airline or a hospitality brand to cover those travel costs in exchange for billing them as the official travel partner on the main stage.
So the event gets the high-quality speaker, but the massive travel expense basically vanishes from their ledger.
Exactly.
It is a phenomenal balancing act.
Yeah.
You are juggling tiered pricing psychology, trying to squeeze every dollar of on-site RPA and aggressively engineering contracts to cut hidden costs.
Mm-hmm.
But executing that flawlessly across tens of thousands of attendees seems impossible if you're just relying on gut feelings and a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Gut feelings are completely obsolete in 2026. To execute this matrix of profitability, organizers rely on venue infrastructure that acts as a giant breathing data collection hub. They are pulling real-time analytics from Wi-Fi networks, Bluetooth beacons scattered around the concourse, and AI-enabled security cameras to generate live heat maps of crowd flow.
They're tracking our physical movement through the building.
Constantly. They track a specific metric called dwell time, which is the exact number of minutes you spend lingering in a specific zone.
Okay, so if I stop somewhere.
Right. If the analytics engine notices you have been standing near a high-margin merchandise booth for 5 minutes but haven't initiated a transaction, the venue's app can trigger a location-based push notification to your smartphone, offering an exclusive 10% off discount code valid for the next 10 minutes.
That is wild. They are essentially identifying hesitation in real time and offering a highly targeted bribe to close the sale.
Basically, yes.
But wait, why does dwell time matter so much at the very end of the night? Once the headliner finishes or the final keynote of the day wraps up, shouldn't the venue want us to leave immediately so they can stop paying their security and bartending staff overtime?
You would assume the labor cost outweighs the benefit, right?
Yeah.
But the mechanics of egress, the exit process, prove otherwise. Longer dwell times correlate exponentially with higher secondary spending.
Even at the end of the night.
Especially then. If 10,000 fans rush the exit simultaneously, the spending stops instantly. And the venue still has to pay security staff overtime just to manage the massive traffic bottleneck in the parking lot. It's a pure liability. So, venues actively use gamification to stretch out the egress.
Gamification? How do you gamify leaving a concert?
You give them a reason not to leave. Venues integrate augmented reality scavenger hunts through the festival app, where attendees can find digital tokens around the venue for a chance to win next year's VIP passes.
Oh, wow.
Or they bring in a late-night DJ to play a set in the main lobby after the arena lights come up. Psychologically, attendees are tired, but they also really dread sitting in gridlock traffic.
Yeah, nobody wants to fight parking lot traffic.
Exactly. So if you offer them an extended party in the lobby, 20% of the crowd stays. This radically reduces the traffic jam for the 80% who do leave. And those who stay end up buying two more high-margin drinks while the venue is already paying the staff anyway. It transforms a logistical nightmare into a highly profitable final hour.
What's fascinating is that this level of data tracking and behavioral engineering isn't just for music festivals. The B2B conferences are pushing this even further.
Oh, in the corporate space, the data is the product. Platforms like Deal Room Events are completely changing the value proposition of a conference ticket. They utilize attendee-exhibitor matchmaking algorithms.
How does that work?
The system cross-references an attendee's registration data, their job title, and their pre-event survey goals with an exhibitor's product offerings. It then pre-schedules guaranteed one-to-one meetings inside branded event apps.
So if a tech company pays $10,000 for an exhibitor booth, they aren't just paying for a patch of carpet in a convention hall and hoping the right people walk by.
No, no. They are paying for algorithmic access to qualified leads.
That completely changes the ROI for sponsors.
Exactly. The monetization also extends long after the physical event ends. Organizers package session recordings, digital slide decks, and exclusive data insights, selling them as an on-demand digital content library. The three-day physical event transforms into a year-round digital revenue stream.
So, to wrap this all up for you listening, the next time you get an early bird email warning you that prices jump on Friday, or you scan a QR code to buy a drink and marvel at how quickly the line is moving, you are no longer just a passive participant in the crowd. You know exactly what's happening.
You see the matrix.
Right. You understand the invisible matrix of revenue per attendee, tiered cash flow, and real-time behavioral analytics operating in the background to ensure that event hits its 20% profit margin.
You really understand the mechanics of the ecosystem you are participating in.
But before we go, there is a final provocative thought buried in the source data from Deal Room that fundamentally flips everything we've just discussed.
Oh, this is the really interesting part.
Yeah. We spent this entire deep dive analyzing how organizers extract more revenue out of ticket tiers, faster beer lines, and digital matchmaking. Yet the data reveals that 60% of modern event planners now consider sustainability their absolute top priority, and 81% believe socially responsible events are fundamentally more successful.
It raises an important question about where the industry's values are actually heading.
Right. If physical constraints, inflation, and soaring venue costs are pushing the traditional attendee-funded model to its absolute breaking point, what if the ultimate future of event monetization isn't about squeezing more money out of our wallets at all? What if the next frontier is monetizing an event's eco-friendly data?
Just think about what that actually means for corporate sponsors. If a massive global festival can mathematically prove through their data infrastructure that their event is carbon negative, that data itself becomes a highly valuable corporate asset.
Exactly. Massive corporations are desperate to boost their ESG scores, their environmental, social, and governance rankings, which basically dictate how ethical and sustainable investors view them.
So they need that data.
Yes. Could we soon see events trading carbon credits on the open market? Or securing multi-million dollar green energy corporate sponsorships designed to underwrite the entire structural cost of the event, effectively making the attendee's ticket practically free?
If the environmental data becomes more valuable to a sponsor than the base ticket revenue is to the organizer, the entire financial architecture we just discussed could flip completely upside down.
It is a wild thought. The data is already pointing in that direction. So the next time you step into a crowded convention center or a music festival, enjoy the keynote, enjoy the music, but take a second to look around and respect the invisible high-stakes economic machinery operating all around you.